Recording. Okay, we are recording. What's up, everybody? Drew here, thatanxietyguy.com. It's been a while. Back with Holly. What's up, Hal?
Yeah, good. All good.
Yes. Happy New Year, everybody. It's January 2018.
I know. It's weird, isn't it?
It is.
Do you have a nice holiday season? I was writing the date the other day, and I was just like, oh, I get to say 2017. And I was like really chuffed because I was thinking it was 2017 because that still felt like the new year. And then I was like, oh, my God, it's 2018. Yeah, that's 2018. Crazy.
I know. Did you have how were your holidays? Were they good?
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah. Yeah, it was quiet. I'm in Mallorca, so it doesn't really feel like Christmas because it's kind of quite sunny. And
I don't know how you deal with that. I couldn't. Like, that's not Christmas, you know?
No, I know.
Our friends in Australia, that's what they deal with.
I know. Well, my husband and his family, they're South African, so they're just like, oh, this is winter, you know?
But yeah. Christmas is hot for them, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, it's been a while because everybody's just been kind of busy. And we are back with the next chapter of Hope and Help for Your Nerves by Dr. Claire Weeks. If you have not, there you go. Thank you, Holly. If you do not have the book, maybe go get it. It's really cheap on Amazon to follow along with us. We're going to do chapter 8 today. If you haven't seen the first 7 chapters, you can go to my website, thatanxietyguy.com, and I'll try and remember the link, but I actually have a link there that shows you the whole thing, or my YouTube channel. There's a playlist there. So, catch up on the first 7.
I subscribe to That Anxiety Guy, and it pops up on my phone when you put a new video up, which
doesn't really.
Yeah, it's going like, boop, boop, Drew's got a new video.
I think probably because YouTube has changed it. So if you do subscribe, I think you have to hit the little bell icon now to get notified.
Right.
I'm a bad YouTuber because I never like beg for subscribers and stuff. I should. I know I should.
It's just handy to know when the next one's out.
I know, right? So anyway, let's talk about chapter 8. Chapter 8 is entitled Fear of Leaving the Safety of Home, parentheses, agoraphobia. And this is a subject that I have extensive experience with because I have dealt with this in the past.
Me too.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about what good old Dr. Weeks says about what agoraphobia is. And I found it interesting that she kind of discussed, although again, keep in mind as you're listening to us that this book was written, I think, in the 60s. So it's the
early 60s as well, I think.
Yeah, so some of the concepts are a little bit dated. But she talks about, you know, the classical definition of agoraphobia, which is fear of an open space, you know, or
fear of the marketplace.
Fear of the marketplace, right, agora. Yeah, exactly. It's a Greek word, but so she gets into that. But it's interesting. She talks about how most people with agoraphobia try to conceal it, which is...
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
I'm not sure
if that still applies today. I think it does, but less so, certainly, than when it was written. But
Yeah. I think I had to think about that for a second when I was reading it, because I'm not sure... Did I ever try? I probably did conceal it. I don't know if I was making a concerted effort to conceal it, but I probably wasn't. When I was dealing with that, I didn't run around telling everybody that I knew about it either.
I concealed panic disorder, just fools everything about it. I just completely concealed it. So yeah, I had just a billion excuses of all
that. And she talks about that, you know, people conceal it and they just make excuse after excuse to avoid, you know, seeing friends or going to family functions. And it's all about not wanting to leave. And I think we'll modify our definition of agoraphobia a little bit. Not wanting to leave the safety of the home is what she's talking about. But it's really all about going into situations and places that are going to make you feel uncomfortable. That's really what agoraphobia is. And she also mentions, which is interesting, about how more women seem to suffer from agoraphobia. But I think that's an older concept also. That's reporting bias to a certain extent, and I think it's from the days, the 50s.
Yeah, like maybe men didn't want to admit to it, exactly.
Or I think women were less likely to be out in the workforce, so they did just naturally spend more time at home. And
yeah,
I think all of those cultural things, at least in the West, you know. Sort
and
of,
here's my theory. We were just discussing off air.
Yes.
I had, like, when I was reading my research for this chapter, I was like, oh my God, busy people don't get agoraphobia. I mean, of course they do, but if you're staying busy, it's physically sort of can't happen to you because if you're leaving the house, then you're not being agoraphobic. Do you know what I mean?
That's true. That's
when you stop or when you're in the house, then it sort of sets in. That's what I find. So maybe, like, with the women who were traditionally more at home, it's hard when you're at home all day
I think that's true, because I think you wind up in a situation where if you're out of the house all the time, and let's talk about, you know what, we could talk about how agoraphobia develops. And I know one of the things that's a little bit of a pet peeve for me is when people talk about agoraphobia as a disease. And I've heard that. Like, this is, I have a disease, it's agoraphobia. It's not, you know, I'm sorry, it's not a disease. It's a learned state. Nobody chooses to learn this, of course. I'm not saying we choose to be this way, but it is a learned state. It's a cognitive malfunction. It's not a disease. And especially when I hear people say, well, I started taking XYZ medication and it cured that disease. It cured agoraphobia. Nah, it didn't. It just took away your anxiety symptoms, which meant that you could go out of the house. So agoraphobia is really what happens, because she says she avoids and avoids and avoids is one of the headings, subheadings. And that kind of leads us to how do you wind up being agoraphobic? It usually will always stem from some anxiety state, right?
Yeah.
So you have an anxiety disorder, you have panic disorder, you're having panic attacks. Agoraphobia is what happens when you begin to avoid every place that you experience panic or anxiety. So first the supermarket and you stop going there. Then the school and you stop going there. Then the shopping mall, you stop going there. Then work and you stop going there. Then school and you stop going there. And your world gets smaller and smaller and smaller until the only place that you feel that you might be safe is in your home. Or even, I've known people who have been confined to one place in their home, the sofa, the bedroom, you know, for very long stretches of time. So that's what agoraphobia really is. It's the natural progression of avoidance. I can't go here. I can't go here. I can't go here. I can't go here. Things get smaller and smaller and smaller. And suddenly the only place that you really have is your home.
Yeah. You know, the only other thing I'll add to that is that, which she doesn't particularly mention, is that I know for me when I was young, because I was 11 when it sort of fully came on to me.
Right.
Was that it wasn't that I was necessarily, because I was just in a panic attack state, like, you know, up and down kind of constantly, you know, and it's, so it, to me, I wasn't really bothered that, oh no, if I go here, I'll have a panic attack. It was because I was just having it all the time anyway, but I was just deathly afraid of people seeing me have a panic attack, because that would just make it a million times worse in my head. Cause I guess it was some sort of like social anxiety on top of it, you know, like, yeah.
Okay.
I think I suffered every type of anxiety altogether in a very sort of intensive burst. And so, and I had to learn to not care what people thought about me in order to be able to get back to school and stuff in the end. That's sort of why I just sort of gave up caring, you know, like, which is just very slightly different to the, if you're just scared of where it's going to happen to you, you know,
Interesting. Okay, so for you, it was, you actually had two different, it wasn't so much that you would panic as that you didn't, it was that you would panic and you didn't want people to see you panic.
Yeah, so at the beginning it was. I mean, as I got older and stuff and I got better, but it was a bit of everything, really, to be honest. But that's just one facet of it that I think that just isn't covered in here. And so that can make it 10 times harder, I think, if you're then afraid that people are going to see you and what are they going to think, and then that makes you even more in an anxious state.
I could totally believe that then, I guess. If you don't want, yeah, sure, you don't want people to, yeah, makes sense.
I don't know why I was so bothered, but at the time I was so bothered. It was just like, that would be the worst case scenario, is people, my school friends, seeing me have like a panic attack, because when you're a teenager, that kind of stuff is...
It's embarrassing. I get it. Sure, I get it.
It's a sucky time.
Well, interestingly, let's go through. And so that's kind of how it develops. You begin to avoid more and more places, either because you're afraid of how you're going to feel. And I think, then we've said this in other chapters too, and in all my other podcasts and stuff, it's not so much that you are afraid of that particular place. And she mentions this. You know that the supermarket won't collapse on you, and you know the manager. What is she something about? The manager of the supermarket isn't going to shoot you with a gun. You know that.
Yeah.
So you don't become afraid of those places. You become afraid of how you will feel in those places.
Exactly.
She specifically mentions that. So and actually, there's a really good book called The Agoraphobia Handbook that I've mentioned to a few people over time. And in the beginning of that book too, they also, and it's a good book because it takes you through some, you know, worksheets and exercises you could do to start to deal with this. But they even define it as, agoraphobia is not the fear of leaving the house. It's the fear of going into places where you will have a symptom attack, which is, which is exactly what it is. You just don't want to go places where you might feel badly, or you think you might feel badly. So that's what that's all about. And she, what's interesting is how, and she uses she, all the time. She, the chapter. Like, it's very, it's a little bit sexist in a way, but just stick with it. Remember the time that
men get all the he all the time. So
yeah, so we'll give you this one. I mean, we're going to give you the chapter on agoraphobia. That's not cool. It's all right. We'll give you the agoraphobia chapter. It's so strange. And at one point she also even talks about the label, and you had mentioned this. She doesn't want to use the term agoraphobia.
Yeah, she says at the end, she says, because she sort of has an introductory paragraph where she talks about how it sort of develops and what it is. And then she says, I will not use the term agoraphobia again. It labels fear too definitely and makes it sound too discouragingly permanent. And I totally agree. I'm not saying we shouldn't call it agoraphobia, but I totally agree with the sort of sentiment of that. And I've seen people say stuff like, oh, I don't leave the house because I'm agoraphobic. So therefore I... Right. This, like, have all these sort of round cuts to stuff, and it's like, I know what you're saying, but it's almost in the language that it's being said in, it makes it feel like, oh, you know, I have diabetes, so I don't eat these types of food, or do you know what I mean? Like, yes. It's not that permanent, you know?
That's the thing I said before.
I have agoraphobia, therefore I can't drive in my car.
Right, exactly. I have, like you said, I have diabetes, so I can't eat cake. You know, it's not that. And that's what I said before. It's not a disease. I don't like when people label it that. I have this disease or this, I am agoraphobic. I am, you know, those are tough things. It's just like anything else. These are just bad cognitive habits that we can.
Yeah. Unlearn. Like currently I am leaning to, I have agoraphobic tendencies. Or,
right. That is so funny because I've used that exact phrase many times over the years. Like, if I'm not careful, I will start to exhibit agoraphobic tendencies. I have literally said that many times. So that's so funny.
Me too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I like that. She doesn't want to give it any more, you know, any more power than it deserves, I guess. So then she goes on to, you know, talk about, she again, so sexist. I love the cultural references, though. You know, in quotes, the subheading, it all started after the birth of my baby. And it's so funny because it kind of does speak to the time when, you know, panic disorder, anxiety disorders, agoraphobia, sometimes we're even referred to as housewives disease. I mean,
yeah. Well, I think Valium was always known as mother's little helper.
Mother's little helper. I know. Like, hey, if you're listening, by the way, don't boycott me. I'm a good dude. I swear. I'm just telling you what she wrote.
But I think there's quite a lot, but I can understand, like, I've heard a lot of people say, like, how after the birth of their baby, you know, this sort of like has happened to them because I think hormonally it can be a difficult time sometimes, which can be anxiety, like panic attack sort of producing and stuff, and anxiety producing. And then also because especially if you used to go out a lot or do stuff, like when you have a baby that you're looking after, whether you're the man or the woman that's looking after the baby, you're in the house a lot, you know, and it's sort of like, so whether you were even meaning to avoid stuff, you are like not doing as much outside of the house than you used to. And so I can totally understand how it sets in. I struggle with it sometimes now because I've got a 1-year-old, you know, and you do find yourself at home a lot and it's sometimes difficult to go out and do more stuff. And so it absolutely is that sort of breeding ground for agoraphobia.
I can see that.
Yeah. And then obviously if you're like suffering anxiety and you're not sort of aware of how to deal with the anxiety, which we discussed in the previous chapters, you know, and then so like for me, it's like quite a simple equation, like anxiety and avoidance equals agoraphobia.
That's very true. That is the perfect formula right there.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. So if you are a new mom and you're just the practical nature of being a mom is going to keep you in the house a little bit more, that's even worse.
Or maybe if you lost your job, you got made redundant or whatever, and then suddenly like you're in the house and you're like, I don't know what to do, or, you know, and you're just not out and about, as if you're not like being kept busy by being out and about.
Because you don't have a reason to go, or you can't go because you're dealing with an infant for whatever.
Or if you've been ill, you know, like a long-term illness, did your back in or something, these things like, they all have a knock on, but it's that breeding ground, you know?
So we have that combination of anxiety plus avoidance, and avoidance could come in two flavors. It's chosen avoidance, and then there's also that sort of unchosen or forced avoidance because of illness or life circumstances or whatever. It's something we should just remain aware of, because I know we were talking again before we went on the air that, you know, both of us, if we're not careful, those sort of things could sneak in again. So, absolutely. You know, a snowstorm here in New York anyway, the Christmas break, I'll tell you just briefly, and we're getting at a tangent a little bit, but I think it applies. There were times in the past when, you know, we'd have the Christmas break here. So especially the kids would end just before Christmas Eve. They wouldn't go back to school till after New Year's. And there were times when that break, we had 2 years, I believe, where the break was a full 2 weeks long. And then we have cold weather. We might have snow. It's the perfect recipe for everything just slows down. You know, people aren't really looking for you at work. And it is a recipe for like hibernating for a week or two, you know, and just like retreating from the world, which is nice if you want a break or whatever. But I have experienced the highest anxiety day of the year for me was traditionally New Year's Day, because that's it. This break is over. And now I must get back to the business of not being agoraphobic. It's interesting. I thought about it this year.
Could New Year's Day be the last day of your sort of holiday?
Yeah, and if New Year's Day fell on a Saturday or Sunday, there'd be still another day or
two. So it's the anticipation as well of knowing.
But it was the marking of this is it. Like that season between Thanksgiving and New Year where you got a little bit of a break, and especially between Christmas and New Year, where the world gave everybody a break for the most part. Like, oh, I'm away for the week. No one would question that. I'm just not around for the week.
Yeah.
That day was always a very, very difficult day for me to deal with. It's not anymore. In fact, I thought about it this New Year's Day thinking like, I don't give a second thought anymore, but it was traditionally a very difficult day for me anxiety-wise, because it would mean like, okay, agoraphobic tendencies are not okay anymore starting tomorrow. So I got to go back to fighting the fight. It was really difficult. So just be wary of avoidance, especially, you know, forced or unforced. So she talks about, you know, If like this, you are not really afraid of wide open spaces or of the marketplace. You know perfectly well that if you go to the corner store, the grocer won't shoot you, blah, blah, blah. So what are you afraid of? She says, you are afraid of the feelings that arise within you when you're in this situation. Feelings that seem to overwhelm you so that you seem unable to think clearly while they are present. You don't trust yourself while you are like this. And this is why you're afraid to go out by yourself. And I think that pretty much nails it. That's exactly what makes agoraphobia. You are afraid to go out because of how you might feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then she goes on to, this is a good chapter because she tries to do a bit of a guided, if it was an audiobook, she would be doing almost a guided exposure.
But
she's written form here. And she talks about imagining how she herself is taking you out of the house on an excursion of some kind. And imagine what she would tell you to get you through it. And it's pretty good. But the point she makes is she starts with, well, here's your very first mistake. And I think if you're dealing with agoraphobia right now, you could totally relate to this. Before you've opened the front door, you've tensed yourself like a violin string. So that's that anticipatory thing where before you even decide to go out the door, you're all ratcheted up and ready to panic.
And the anticipation just sort of is the destroyer of most things.
It is. Right. It is. It's the destroyer of exposure to begin with. So it stops people from even getting off the dime. And it just sets you up immediately for it sets you up for failure, but it sets you up. You don't want to leave because you're afraid of how you might feel. Well, when you start this way, it's almost guaranteed that you're going to feel shitty when you get out the door.
Yeah.
And she talks about that.
Because if you're scared that you're going to feel anxious and panicky, then by being anxious about being anxious, you know, it's just
You're afraid to be afraid.
Yeah, you self-fulfilled prophecy, you know.
Right. Like if I go out the door, I'm going to be terrified. So I am terrified to be terrified. And it makes sense. But I think this is not something that you can necessarily stop. This is what exposure is going to help you with this as well. But acknowledging that, because so many people will say to me, like, I can't even get out the door. I'm afraid to get out the door. How do I do this? Well, it's supposed to be that way. You're going to feel that way. Dr. Weeks calls it your first mistake.
One of my biggest tips on that is just to do stuff straight away, like in the morning, or set a time and you go regardless of how you're feeling or whatever. And if you, I've read quite a lot into anticipation anxiety, and if you give yourself an out where you can go like, oh, maybe I'll go, maybe I won't, depends how I feel at the time, which used to be my slogan, that actually just makes it so much worse. Like you think that you're like, well, I'm giving myself an out, so therefore I won't be as anxious. They say that like all the studies and everything show that it actually does the opposite. And if you just commit and you know that you go in,
right,
regardless, it actually kind of makes it easier. And I promise it really does.
Like, it does.
It really, really does. I've done that with flights and all sorts. Like when I was really bad, I was like, oh, you know, we had to fly to South Africa. It's like an 11, 12 hour flight. And I was just like, oh, what if I can't go at the end? Will you still, to my husband, like, will you still go? Like, I don't want your sort of trip to be ruined.
He's like,
no, you have to come.
Right.
Whether you like it. And I was like, but what if I'm panicking on the plane? It's just like, I don't care.
Oh, well. Yeah. Good for him. I don't care.
And I was actually like, oh, okay. And then as soon as I was just like, okay, so I'm going to South Africa regardless. And I was just like, yeah, okay. All right. Well, okay. I'm going.
Whatever. All right. There you go. Right. You have no out that way.
It weirdly just made everything a lot easier.
And I think it's that sitting on the fence between I will, I won't, I will, I won't. There's enough fear as it is already. And that I will, I won't, I will, I won't. It just seems to exacerbate it. It makes it worse. Yeah. So I know for me, and I guess everybody's routine is a little bit different. What really helped me was just I would literally roll out of bed and immediately go out the door. Like immediately. I mean, you know, just put on a hat and whatever, like throw on whatever clothing I saw first. It didn't matter. I wasn't going out to win a fashion contest. I was just practicing getting out.
Yeah.
And getting in that habit, which was hard the first few days, but then it became a habit and there was no thinking about it. It wasn't getting up, eating breakfast, sitting at the kitchen table, thinking about, I'm going to go out soon. I just did it immediately. That was a huge.
Yeah. And watch what you said. I wasn't thinking about it, which is kind of floating, isn't it? Like the Dr. Weeks floating kind of thing.
Sure. A little bit.
Not going to think about it. Just do it.
But you make that commitment that says, I'm going to go out the door. I'm probably going to feel awful when I do this. I'm going to be terrified, but I'm just committed to that. This is what I'm going to do. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to be scared shitless. Like, okay. And that's just what I'm going to do. So I just didn't give myself any time to think about what was going to happen. Yeah. I would get out of bed and bam, go right out the door, which sucked in the winter when it was freezing and snowing, but it was a huge, I agree with you. You should not give yourself an out. Like, do it as quickly as you can, as early in your day as you possibly can, so you're not thinking about it.
Like, talk to anybody, whether they suffer from anxiety or not. When they've got a flight that they have to catch and it's in the evening, it is just the worst because you spend all day, flight coming. Even if you're not scared of flying or scared of anything like that, it's just sort of like this thing that hangs over. And by the end of the day, like, you're really wound up, you know?
And for really no reason in the end.
No.
You know, I was at Mark Twain. I just saw that in the forum somebody said the other day. It was a really good quote. Most of the worst things in my life never happened. Yeah, that was a great, great quote. I don't know who said that. Whoever, if you were listening, thank you. That was a really good quote. But not giving yourself time to think about that is really a key thing, a real key thing. So I'm a big fan of that for sure. But again, it takes that commitment. You have to be willing to do this first.
So I highlighted one more thing
in that paragraph. She says, before you even leave, you've tensed yourself up like a violin string, right? You're all tensed up. And she says, if one plucks a taut violin string, it will vibrate and make a noise. But if you loosen the tuning peg and the string is slack, it doesn't make any noise. It just lays there. So that's a really good analogy because
it's really good, isn't it?
Right. So almost the first exposure that you have to do when you're agoraphobic is the exposure and anticipatory anxiety. Even if your outings are very small or even almost non-existent, open the door and stand on the front step is all you can manage. That's fine. But you will learn to relax in the face of the anticipation first. So you almost have to expose yourself to the anticipatory anxiety and learn to, you know, go slack and relax into that first before you can learn to relax in the supermarket or whatever your goal is. So it's a really good analogy. I think it's a really good point. So then she talks about not making the first mistake. You got to slacken those strings. You have to learn to relax. So work on the anticipatory anxiety first. Just let it be there. Feel it. Don't tense against it and learn to relax into it like we've been talking about.
Yeah.
And so what does she say? The worst that can happen to you out there in the street or in the shop is that you can let yourself become frightened. That's the worst thing that can happen, is that you can allow yourself to be frightened. But I think we have to clarify that and say, she's not saying that the worst thing that can happen is that you are afraid. The worst thing that can happen is that you react to being afraid. You allow yourself to be afraid of being afraid. I think that's what she really is talking about here. Because you're going to be afraid. That's okay. It's expected in the beginning. So, you know, she says, I know how severe that fright can be, but if you release as much tension as possible and be prepared to accept that, you know, then it won't be quite so overwhelming. So if I already know when I get in the car, I'm going to be freaking out, then I won't be surprised that I'm freaking out, and it won't be, I'm expecting it. I'm prepared for it. I know it's going to happen. It's not a mystery. Just bring it. And it's not as bad suddenly.
Yeah.
You know, and we've talked about this many times, like the key, the success, and this is where you're dealing with panic attacks or agoraphobia. The success is not measured by not feeling anxiety or fear. It's measured by how you deal with that. And this is a good example that she's saying right here.
So I realized that that Christmas break that you're talking about, exactly this happened to me this year. So like, cause you know, I go and I'm working, I'm doing this, I'm doing stuff. And then suddenly like over the Christmas week, cause I had gigs, you know, all over, but like there was about a week where I wasn't doing anything. It was just home stuff. And then I was like, oh, I needed to go into Palmer, into the city to go and buy a hat for a video shoot. It sounds ridiculous. And I was up against the clock. And so suddenly I was just like, so it was quite not a stressful thing. It's quite a drive. I had to take the baby with me. And suddenly I kind of was like, oh my God, I'm feeling like anxious about this. What's this about? And it was kind of like a weird sort of like, I'm feeling like really anticipation and just sort of like, but I was just like, well, I've just got to go and do it. So I'll just like, luckily I had to go and do it because we had to do the shoot like that evening sort of thing.
Okay.
And, whereas if I think I didn't have to, I would just be like, oh, I'll go tomorrow and get a hat. Like, so I had to get in the car and I went and I'm shopping and it's in the mall and it's all like, you know, busy and Christmas tunes and, you know, like it was just sort of kind of horrible mall-y sort of stuff. And I was expecting that I would feel okay later on. And I still was feeling like a bit, cause I was still up against it. Like I was just spending more and more time, like not getting the stuff done that I needed to. And so I was just like stressed really, but it was coming out as sort of anxiety. And I just think, I just hadn't prepared. It caught me by surprise, you know what I mean? And I was just like, this is so strange. I don't get anxious anymore. I don't really know what the moral of the story is. I just carried on and got the hat. And then I went home. And then when I got home, I sort of forgot about it. And then everything was fine. And then the next time I went to the shop, it was fine again.
It was nothing.
It just sort of reminded me that like a while ago, an episode like that, I guess, would have been, I would have read so much into it. Like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, does this mean I'm back at square one? Does this mean I suffer from anxiety again? And two, I probably wouldn't have gone, or I would have found an excuse to not go. Like, I don't really need a hat for the video shoot. Or, do you know what I mean? Like all sorts of things. And I think also what is just key to remember is that even people that don't suffer anxiety and stuff, like have stressful days where they don't feel great, and to do stuff on top of feeling terrible is just part of like living. And I used to make this mistake of thinking everyone else who didn't suffer from panic disorder just felt amazing all the time. Look at them in the town shopping in the rain. They're fine, aren't they? And just like, no, they're miserable and just having a horrible day. And they've got money stress and this stress and all sorts of stuff going on.
Look at them and their smiling faces.
Yeah. And it's weird, isn't it? You just assume everyone else is fine and they're not. And I just think so much of, I know like it's a different thing, but like the exposures and stuff like that, going out and feeling horrible when you're doing stuff like that, it's just so important to not, it doesn't mean anything. It just means you're feeling awful and you go and do something and then, and then later you don't feel awful. Do you know what I mean? I'm not really explaining.
No, I think, you know, first of all, you had the Christmas week and you said you were just sort of home a lot. And so, yeah, but people like us, even, you know, and look, I'm everywhere now. It doesn't matter to me, but if I'm not careful, those tendencies will crawl back in. So I think it's just an illustration of how ingrained those patterns can be.
Yeah.
Right?
They're really ingrained.
They really are ingrained. And I think in the end, you know, we come from the factory, you know, programmed to seek comfort and safety. So anything that isn't that becomes really easy to avoid. So if we always have those triggers laying under us, you know, to understand, like, and I think sometimes these are just patterns. They're pathways that get wired in, you know, at some point, and we can wire over them, but I don't know if we necessarily always, you know, always wipe out the old wiring. So, you know, when you talk about brain plasticity and the way we learn and neural pathways. And all that stuff. You know, maybe some of those pathways are still there. So when you get into a familiar situation, which is not a good situation, but it's familiar, just being home all the time, you know, suddenly those pathways are lit a little bit more than the newer ones, the go, go, go pathways, you know? So, you know, really common. And you're right. We ascribe so much like significance to every minute of how we feel and how our exposure was and what happened and what did I say and how did I stand and how was I breathing and what did that person do and what did my husband or my wife do? And in the end, it's just another day. Like it's just another day. And, you know, we were talking before about just get out, like don't allow yourself an out. Don't think about it all day. Do it as soon as you can. I used to try and think too, like your hat situation. Look, I can, right now it's 11 a.m. on a Saturday morning. It's going to be noon. You know, in 60 minutes, no matter what I do, noon is going to happen.
Yeah.
I can't stop noon from coming. It's going to come 60 minutes from now, no matter what I do. So I used to think about, like, I can go out the door and make some progress in the next 60 minutes. And then noon is going to come and I'll be done. You know, I'll have accomplished it. I can rest. I can retreat. I would give myself all these like little pep talk, or I could just sit here like a lump and noon is going to happen anyway. So how do I want to feel when noon hits? Do I want to feel like a failure or do I want to feel like, all right, well, it's noon just like it was going to be anyway. And I did something good. So there's so many different ways to
approach. That's so good and motivational, not just for anxiety, but just in general.
Or just anything. Like no matter what happens, it's going to be 7 p.m. tonight. No matter what happens, I can't stop that from coming. So what am I going to do in the time between now and then? Like, how am I going to feel when I get there? So if I have something crappy to do, like shopping for a hat that I don't want to buy, well, you know, I can get to 7 p.m. discover, well, I got my hat. I accomplished it. I'm good. I checked it off my list. Or I can get to 7 p.m. and be pissed off because I didn't go hat shopping. So which one do I want to be? Yeah.
Damn this hat.
This hat is the bane of my existence. It wasn't even my music video when I hate your hat. So, anyway, let's go back to Dr. Week.
That's all right.
No, it's okay. This is why we do this. So she takes you by the hand and she walks you out the door, right? So she talks about slackening the violin strings. Don't go out already tensed up and ready to panic. And we're walking down the street and here comes Mrs. X. I guess Mrs. X appears to be her version of like the gossipy neighbor.
Yeah, and also, but here comes Mrs. X, so it's like, oh, and you're scared that Mrs. X is going to notice that you're all anxious and stuff, and that's a bit like my sort of social, like, mm-hmm. Oh, people are going to see me panicking, and she's just like, people don't really think about stuff like that. She just thinks, she's just excited to see you, Mrs. Right. X. She hasn't seen you in ages because you've been in your house all the time. That's what Dr. Week says. She says, Mrs. X comes running over to you and you're like, oh my gosh, she's coming over because she's going to be like, where have you been? Or what are you doing? Or
sure.
And she's just like, oh great. I haven't seen you in ages. Are you good? Oh, it's so good to see you.
Yeah. And I think Mrs. X serves two purposes in this little passage here. She illustrates that number one, that fear of like being judged or how, oh my, what is Mrs. X going to think about me now that she sees me?
She doesn't really think about you.
Thank you, Ayn Rand, but I don't think about you. Yes. And I think, sometimes what happens for people like us when we're in these anxiety states, we're dealing with things like agoraphobia, we get so wrapped up in ourselves that we think everybody's thinking about us. Guess what? No one's thinking about you. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but when I was stuck in my house, like none of my neighbors or friends or coworkers or employees gave a rat's ass that I was stuck in my house. They weren't thinking about me. They just weren't. So there's that. And number two, she uses Mrs. X as an example of a trap. So now you're out and you're in the street with Dr. Weeks holding your hands. And here comes Mrs. X. Number one, what is she going to think of me? And number two, what if she wants to talk to me now?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I can't escape. I'm trapped. I'm trapped in the conversation with Mrs. X. So she gives a good example of like, okay, so now she's excited to see you. And Mrs. X starts blabbing at you with the neighborhood gossip or whatever she wants to talk about. And your heart starts racing. And Dr. Week says, you know, so what? Essentially, so what? And we talk about this all the time. Does it matter if you feel your heart beating? It doesn't matter in the least, right? It certainly doesn't matter to your heart. Like, your heart doesn't care. So she tries to use the example of, like, let Mrs. X talk, chatter, go for it. And she says,
Your heart's I've been beating the whole time you hadn't noticed as well.
Yeah, exactly. Like, hello, I'm just here doing what I do. Like, no, I've been doing this for 51 years or however old you are. Our heart doesn't care. It makes no judgment. And so she talks about imagining her, Dr. Weeks. And if you've ever listened to her audiobooks, you would hear her voice. She sounds like somebody's grandma to me. She was older, I think, when she recorded. And she has that adorable accent that everybody here in the U.S. loves. And
she's British or Australian? She's Australian, right?
I think she's Australian, but she didn't seem to, I don't know.
I think she sounds quite English.
Right, she does, yeah. But yeah, she is a very like comforting, like grandma's kind of voice. But so she pretends she whispers to you, like, let get relaxed, take a breath, chill out kind of thing. And, you know, basically she talks about if you do that, suddenly the minute you relax, suddenly you don't feel as trapped as Mrs. X talks about, like the mailman or whatever she wants to talk about. So it's a good illustration of, like, you know, what she's trying to tell you is, see, like, Mrs. X isn't a trap. There is no trap. It was you upsetting yourself.
Yeah.
And when
Mrs.
you let
X
go,
didn't upset you. You upset.
Right, you did. Right. Exactly. So you interpreted that situation as dangerous when it was not. And if you let that go, suddenly you're still might be interested in the conversation, but suddenly you don't feel like you're, you know, at gunpoint anymore. So yeah. It's a really good illustration. And that's the process.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Just relax into it and everything gets better.
Yeah. Yeah. Magically, everything does start to get better. And it's so interesting, you know, I've seen a bunch of those posts in our little discussion group on Facebook. And I'll put a link. So if you're not in the group, request to join and come on in. It's a great group of people. And I've seen people make those posts over the past few weeks that, like, oh, I was out and I started to panic and I thought about it for a second and I just relaxed and suddenly it got better. You know, in 10 minutes, I was over it and I was out and, you know, still had my coffee or we finished shopping and they're just so excited that they succeeded. And yes, she says it right here. And this she's telling you, like, just relax. It'll get better almost instantly. So what else does she do? She starts taking us down the trip a little more, crossing the road. Yeah. She
talks about jelly legs.
The old jelly
legs will still get you there.
That's exactly what I highlighted. That's, you can't see, it's all whited out, but jelly legs will still get, I highlighted that exact thing on my stupid little Kindle here. Jelly legs will still get you there if you will let them. It's only a feeling, not a true weakness. And we've talked about this so many times. She goes into, like, the actual mechanism of adrenaline is going to change muscle tone and blah, 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 blah. That's why your legs feel like jelly. But so they feel that way. But doesn't mean they are actually jelly.
Yeah. It's right. Not like, don't let that be the excuse to not continue, to be like, oh, but, you know, my legs felt like they were going to collapse, so I physically couldn't go on anymore.
Felt like. Key felt phrase. Like. It felt like, and I've seen that too. I've seen those in many, many discussions. It felt like, yeah, but felt like wasn't is. Like, did you actually collapse? No, it just felt like
I was going to pass out, yeah.
Right. So running home doesn't make your legs any stronger, right?
I mean, if you think about it, why would going home cure any of your physical symptoms?
Yeah, it's easy. I think, you know what? It's easy for us sitting here.
I know.
In a calm state, joking with each other to say that. And I think
a
lot of people
watching
would probably do the same thing. Like,
I would always think, if I can just get home, everything will be okay.
Everything will be fine.
And then when you stop and analyze it, you're just like, why? Because I'll relax. Because I'll be like, oh, phew, I'm home. It's just like, why? What does home give you?
No, nothing. And, you know, even now, I sometimes will think that. I happened to be out in the past week, and I haven't really been sleeping well. And anyway, perfect storm for heightened anxiety. And, you know, I encountered a little bit of an issue while I was out. And I stopped. I had to pull over for a second and thought, you know, I really had to think about this, because I'm like, I'm just going to turn around and go home. Like, in all honesty. But I had to really stop and be honest with myself and say, why do I not want to do this task that I'm doing here? You know, like 45 minutes of sleep is not a lot of sleep. I'm exhausted. I really had to reason through that and say, I just need to just take a break. I'm so tired. So, but otherwise the natural tendency is, like, I will feel better if I go to some safe place. But, like,
yeah,
you know, being home isn't going to make me physically feel any different than I already was. So what's the difference? It doesn't matter where you are. Yeah.
And I think that's quite a good thing to do, isn't it? Every time, if you're out on, like, an exposure or something, and you're like, and you're just feeling that, like, I just need to get this, because that's the white knuckling. If you're like,
yes,
I just need to do this and buy my hat and then everything will be okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that is the wrong way to do it. You just need to sort of stop and think, like, what is it you're trying to get to the end of that you think will be okay, you know, like, oh, right. Once I've got it, then I can go home and then it'll be okay. Like, you need to sort of really, like, so every time you think, like, okay, now I'm gonna go home, like, just try and stop yourself and be like, why do you think that being at home will be better? and just try and sort of maybe just, because it was probably maybe personal to each person even, you know, and just try and reason it out a little bit to yourself what it is that you're going to gain at home and see how you can give that to yourself, like where you are, you know, like a little bit of it.
Yeah, this came up in discussion the last week too. Like the death, that's interesting, I think. So you deal with, this applies not just to agoraphobia, but just about all of this stuff. But agoraphobia, you're trying to get out of the house, right? You're trying to deal with that. There is no destination here. Like for me, when you're trying to get past agoraphobia, there is no, even though by definition, like, well, I can't leave my house. So my goal is to get to wherever. Like for me, it was like, wow, you know, to get back into New York City, which is, you know, 40 miles away from me. But in the end, there really is no destination when you're overcoming agoraphobia. The destination is the panic. Like you need to go there. And then it doesn't actually, once you go there and you learn how to live there, then there is no more destination.
You'd be in the middle of the desert. Yeah.
It doesn't. You could be in a plane and the ocean on a cruise, you know, around the world in your bathroom and your home. It doesn't matter where you are. So
it's honestly an amazing when you realize that as well, isn't it? When you realize like, I don't mind where I am because I know how to deal with me and that's fine. And then suddenly like, it's not the things, it's, you realize it's you. It's not the things around you.
It had nothing to do with the airport or, yeah. She actually says this. it's you. I had to get over myself.
Beforehand, turn in the screw.
That's right. In the end. And again, that doesn't mean that she or we are blaming ourselves or blaming you if you're watching or listening, not blaming you for being in the situation, but we have to take responsibility for our contribution to it because we are in control of that process. And she even says, like, if you chill, you know, you let yourself cross the road, don't worry about the jelly legs. You know, she says, by now, you know, you crossed the road, you made it. And by now you're not quite so impressed by the tricks your body has been playing on you. Mm. So, you know, suddenly you begin, and we've talked about this a lot, where you unmask that fear as being baseless. And it's a very empowering feeling. Like once you do that, like, oh, wow, I made it and I was fine. And that wasn't so bad after all. So she does talk about in the next paragraph, the full fear treatment. And this could be true. It's, you're trying to get out of the house after being housebound for some period of time. This is true too. I've experienced this. You get out and within a given exposure, even suddenly you feel like, wow, this is awesome. You're making all kinds of progress. You know, you're 10, 15 minutes into it and you think you're doing great. And then all of a sudden, she says, in a flash, you turn on all the screws at once and you give yourself the full fear treatment. And it is as if you have made no progress at all, just when you thought you were beginning to get the right idea. And I think that happens on the macro level from session to session over days and weeks, but it can also happen at the micro level within any given session. Like what was great 3 minutes ago is just flushed right down the tubes.
Yeah.
You know, when suddenly you ratchet it up again, and you start fighting and you're running from it again. And all of a sudden it's like everything just went to crap. And that can happen from minute to minute. And she acknowledges that. So,
it's so true. And like, because what can, because what used to happen to me, I'd write off whole months. This is a bad month. This is a bad week. And then like, this is a bad day. Like, oh, I'll just write this day off because I've had so many panic attacks today. Mm-hmm. This is a bad day. And now it's like, this is a bad 3 minutes. This is a bad minute. This is a bad 30 seconds.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
And that's what actually, when I was out in the mall buying my hat, I remember thinking to myself as I was driving home, I was just like, okay, this has just been a bit of a wipe out of 2 hours. But the rest of the day was great. And we shot the video and it was great. And it was, I didn't feel an ounce of, I didn't even think about it anymore, anxiety.
Right. It wasn't a whole day affair anymore.
No. And so, maybe it's nice to hear that you can like suffer anxiety and just be okay. Well, that was a bad hour, but the next hour is fine, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Or 10 minutes from now even could be fine again.
Yeah. So
I think the point here, when she acknowledges that this can happen, is you have to almost expect that it might happen. So even though, wow, I was doing great. And I've seen people say that, like, oh, I keep talking about the supermarket, but as an example, I was in the supermarket for the first time in weeks, you know? Yeah. And I was doing great. And then suddenly I realized how deep in the store I was. Oh my God, I was in the dairy section. And suddenly, you know, you realize what's going on, you freak out and you bail on it. So I heard that happen, but it can happen. It's just expect it to happen. And the same principles apply. No matter how tight you make those screws, the same principles apply. Just untighten them.
Yeah. And also remember that if you do panic and then you, or, you know, if you do freak out on the exposure and then you manage to sort of work through it and relax into it, that's amazing. That's good.
That's the win. That's the victory.
If you don't exposure and you don't feel any anxiety, well, like, good for you. I'm glad you had a nice time out. But
right,
you haven't
learned
anything other than maybe that you don't feel anxious as much as you think you do or something.
Sometimes I think it's even worse. When, because I've seen that happen too. It sets the bar high. And I've seen people get in that situation where it's, you know, it's great. I've been out all every day this week and I've had almost no anxiety. It's great. And then they go out the next week and they have a panic attack and like, oh, that was all crap last week. It was nothing. Yeah.
I get really nervous when I see people reporting how they've been anxiety free for a few weeks or something. I'm like, oh no.
Well, I mean, it's, I get what you're saying. It's good. I mean, you want people to have to feel good, of course.
Yeah, but you worry about then the expectation, you know?
Yes. Yeah. To me, I find it a lot more exciting. I'm not gonna say exciting, like nobody's job is to excite me, but I find it more important when I hear somebody say like, yeah, I kind of freaked out in the dairy section of the supermarket, but you know, I relaxed for a minute, I got through it and I kept shopping. Or even somebody who says, I ran out, I got in my car, but then I calmed down and I went back in. Like those are the huge improvement, rewiring things.
Something.
Yes, exactly. So that's a big deal. So she does talk about let the storm pass. Let the storm pass. Let the effects of adrenaline pass. Even at the climax of your fear, surrender and accept. So she talks about all that stuff. At the very moment when your feelings seem to engulf you, that is the moment above all when you must surrender and accept. No more, oh my goodness, no more what ifs. And we've talked about this ad nauseum. We will continue to talk about it. That the proof is in the pudding at that moment, not being anxiety free, not and when you are at your worst, when you could just let that happen with and just bring it on, bring the worst you can bring and just fully accept that and just not care if that lasts for 30 seconds or 30 minutes. You know, you have pretty much at that moment, the first time you do that, you literally have won this war. You don't know it yet, but you have now won that war. You may lose some battles along the way, but when you, the first time you actually ever do that, you have won the war. Now it's over. It's now that you just have to figure out that you won the war. So it's really cool. And she says, if you go forward, however hesitatingly, understanding it with an understanding of what's happening, ready to accept all the tricks your fears may play upon you, your reactions will gradually calm. And she's right. That's exactly what happens. So, and she ends the paragraph. I know I'm skipping a lot. It's a short chapter, but, and she ends this paragraph, which I think is huge. You will find peace in the middle of Times Square because you will take your cure with you wherever you may be. And so that speaks to so many things, coloring books and rubber bands and mints and water and your wife or your husband or your mom or your dad, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your safe person, your medications, all of those things just, they can all go away. Like you are taking the cure with you in your own pocket.
Yeah.
Everywhere you go. It's life changing.
It's unbelievably good.
Completely life changing. That is such a good sentence.
Yeah. When you, I think also if you get yourself better from panic disorder, the rest of life seems like really like you've cheated, like you've got like some tools that other people don't know about. And it's really cool.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's, I will, you know what? I'll tell you flat out. Like I lived a very large portion of my life before the wheels fell off for me in the late '90s, when things got bad for me, anxiety wise, the first time. I kind of lived in like an armor plated way. Like nothing, I never got nervous. Nothing bothered me. I wasn't, you know, I never got nervous about work or anything, or, you know, I was a musician back then and I would get nervous about performing. Nothing. Like I was like ridiculous. That's not normal, you know?
Yeah.
And when things got really bad for me, you know, I medicated myself for many years. I stopped taking it, got really bad because of the whole withdrawal thing. Then I suffered, you know, I had to learn to deal with it without the medication. All I wanted was that guy back. I wanted that armor-plated bulletproof guy back. But you know what? I'm glad he's not there anymore, because the lessons I learned dealing with this, like there is nothing you can bring at me. And at the moment in my life, I have got a pile taller than me, like up right up here that I'm just holding up all the time. Nothing, you know, because you just, you just get that like that armor plated feeling, but it's an enhanced armor plating now.
Yeah.
It's not a brain dead armor plating. It's a reactive armor plating. Like I understand stress. I understand fear, but I can absorb it and reflect it and use it and direct it into good places. And it makes you like a freaking superhero. So yeah. I highly urge everybody to like overcome your agoraphobia, because you will get to a level that you didn't think you had in your life. I mean, this sounds ridiculous, like old Tony Robbins like, but you know, but it's true. I can see the smile on your face. I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. It's just like an elevated, I don't know, everything seems so easy to sort of, you sort of see how everyone's been affected by their own sort of stresses and stuff as well. And it just seems so sort of obvious what's going on. And do you know what I mean? And
suddenly you become like this wise person too. Have you ever noticed that? Like I'm just some goofball. I'm no different than you or anybody else, but like, I guess the lessons we learn in this, somehow you people think you're so wise, or like, I find myself saying things or reacting to like, wow, I can't believe I actually said that. Like, but that's the experience that I've gone through, and just life experience, and you know, having gone through 50 years or whatever. So it's a thing. And I think the other thing that it does, and I don't know if you would, so you're a performer, you know, I think in some ways you encounter the same stressors that like athletes do. And you hear all this time, if you're a sports fan, you may have seen some of these things. What made Wayne Gretzky like the greatest hockey player to ever play? What made, you know, Joe Montana, one of the greatest quarterbacks ever to play American football, or whatever athlete you like. And invariably, one of those common threads seems to be their vision in the field. Like, they saw things happen before everybody else did. And for them, the game goes slower than everybody else. So even in an ice hockey game where everything is happening so fast, most people can't even follow the puck if they're in the stands watching, much less playing. For those elite players, they perceive time slower, and they're just calm, and they can see things happening very clearly, and they can react appropriately and do things that other people can't do because they couldn't see it. I don't know if you have found the same in your performing career, but after going through what you have gone through, do you feel more like, I know I do, like the game life happens slower sometimes. So what I get all the time is like, wow, this place could be burning down. And you know, until like my temper goes, because I have a bad temper. But otherwise, like, I get that all the time. Like, no matter what's going on, you're just like this and you just know what to do. Like, you just know
what to do. What I find really cool was just that freedom of like being able to go anywhere in the world at any time. Do you know what I mean? Night, day, other continents, by yourself with people. It like, suddenly it's like, oh my God, like there's no situation that I will avoid because it makes me anxious about, do you know what I mean? Like, it kind of makes me really fearless. That's what I found, like just an absolute fearlessness sort of, but in a way where you, I don't know, or where you sort of, I don't know, you just understand yourself so much more and how you're reacting to it, and that you can just kind of do anything you want, really. That's what I found.
I think it's true. And I think only because she mentions it here. She even says, I'll give you one more, you know, she talks about take yourself by the hand. So in this chapter, she wants you to visualize her taking you by the hand and taking you through an exposure. But then she says, but in the end, you have to learn to take yourself by the hand, and it will never fail you if you follow it, and follow it until you learn to take yourself by the hand, until you are your own guide and your own strength. And in the end, that really is what gets you past agoraphobia. You will cure yourself. Your doctor won't do it. Your psychologist, your psychiatrist, your mom, your dad, your boyfriend, your girlfriend. No one else will do it. You will do it. We won't do it. The book won't do it. A pill won't do it. You will do it.
Yeah. Like, and I find that really empowering. If that's
hell
a
yeah.
Crappy hell word. Yeah. But yeah.
No, it's a great word. And you know, and sometimes I think sometimes I take kind of a hard line, especially with people who, I mean, you see who I interact with online sometimes in the groups that we are in together. And I do take a little bit of a hard line, like, hey, stop feeling sorry for yourself. Stop the what if, stop comparing symptoms. Like, I truly believe that everybody came from the factory with that inside them. We all have it. And I would love if everybody experienced the same thing that you're talking about, that I'm talking about. that other friends of ours who have overcome this are talking about. Like, yeah, it's a great, great, great thing. Like, your life doesn't have to be stuck in your living room. It doesn't really doesn't have to be.
I don't know if she would mind me saying this, but one of our friends, right, who was also an admin of a panic disorder group, who lost right her father recently.
Yes.
She messaged me and said that she, and I was like, how are you doing, you know, after your like dear sort of father passed away? And she said, do you know what? I've found that if I accept the symptoms of grief, it's okay. Like, I'm and it's kind of like the same thing as the anxiety. Like, so she's not saying she's fine. She's obviously like very upset and grieving, but she's right saying that she's expecting to feel it and she's accepting those feelings. And she said, and somehow it just makes everything a lot better, you know, that she,
yeah,
so she's actually like, I'm doing okay because I'm accepting that I'm feeling horrible. You
right
know?
I mean, she's going to feel sad and devastated and empty and all those things.
Absolutely.
But she's not fighting it.
Exactly. And I think that that's such an amazing yeah lesson, you know,
very healthy.
She's got herself over anxiety through the same way. And so now she can apply it to other parts in her life. And I think that's really,
she's particularly awesome. Diane.
Amazing.
I don't think she would mind. Yeah. I love her. Yeah, she's great. And I think that's true. So that she applied her lessons. And you know what? That applied, or this is beyond the scope of the agoraphobia discussion, but it, especially here in the US where we're just prescription crazy, we like to medicate being human here in the US.
Yeah.
Or at least we have for the last 20 years or so, 20 some years. So like, oh, I got divorced, I was depressed. Here's some antidepressants. My dad died. Here's some antidepressants. Lost my job. Here's some antidepressants. Like, we sort of forgot that medicating humanity might not be a good idea.
Yeah. And humans aren't programmed to, you're not supposed to just feel amazing all the time. It's okay to not feel amazing all the time. That's what I was trying to remind myself of when I was like recovering. It's just like, I just assumed everyone else was fine all the time. And they're not. Yeah.
No, they're not.
In many ways, they're doing terribly a lot of the time.
I mean, you know what? I think the difference is, I don't know if you and I have talked about it, or Billy and I have talked, I've talked about it with somebody or on my own. But for me, I remember sitting in the car a very specific morning, one of those mornings when I just rolled out of bed and got in the car. And I drove around for a while, very close to my house, but it was just more about time than distance for me in the beginning. And I remember sitting in the parking lot of a little shop that's right near my house, and people were pulling up next to me, and they were getting out of the shop and going in and buying whatever they were buying. And I remember looking, there was a woman who had parked diagonally from me. And I was just sitting in the car, and I remember looking at her, and she pulled up into her parking spot, and she just sat there, and she was rubbing her eyes, and she just looked like the last place she wanted to be was in that parking lot going in to buy orange juice or whatever the hell she had to buy that day. And I remember the light bulb going off, thinking like, she probably didn't sleep last night. Who knows what is going on in this woman's life right now? She does not look happy. She doesn't want to be here. What's the difference between me and her? You know, I may actually have a better life than her right now. It's possible, you know, and it really made me think about that. And that's when I started using other people, complete strangers, as models to a certain extent, you know, and I would go out and do my exposures. I would literally look at complete strangers and say like, well, that guy, let me imagine that he didn't sleep at all last night. Maybe he just lost his job. Maybe his dog just died or something terrible just happened. I didn't want that to be, and he's still just walking through the supermarket buying milk. Or he's standing waiting in line at the bank, or he's going off to work today like everyone else does. And it was hugely liberating to do that too. So there's so many lessons that you can learn when you go down this path and you know, win the war, whatever you want to call it. But you know, the other thing that I'd probably say, and we could start to close on a little bit, I don't know how you think about this, but I hear all the time, I hear those motivational words like warrior and, you know, we're warriors, W-A-R-R, not warriors, warriors, you know, like.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're warriors.
We are warriors, but I guess, warriors, and this will beat everyone to their knees. They don't understand how we're so strong with this, with that. You know, like, those are all good things. Don't get me wrong. I'm all for that. You know, I'm as caveman as the next guy, but to a certain extent, I think it's so much deeper than that. You know, the ability to learn to be soft and analytical and take things in and then reflect them back out or direct them more so than, you know, that concept of like, I'm just going to draw my sword and hack and slash and burn through this agoraphobia. Yeah, there's some of that, but it's a lot deeper than that. So it's worth taking the trip, man. Just start today. Like, start today.
I really like your analogy of the tree, like you bend, don't
you bend, but break. You don't break. That it wound up right here. It's actually on my shoulder. This tree is bending in the wind. It's so important to me that it's the central part of this piece.
Like, it's forever
now. Yes. So, and that tree, it bends, but it does not break.
Because if you're so strong against something and it comes up against you and you're like, it can break you. Whereas if you just bend.
Yeah. You just bend and go with it, you know, and it's just, it's a better way to live. Cause I think that bending thing also uses less energy, you know, in a way. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, I can dodge, you know, like the Matrix, you know, when he was dodging the bullets. Like, it's a whole lot better than trying to block them and absorb the energy. Just let them go past you. So,
I think that fight, it is really like, but it has to be like very concentrated into a very tiny bit, which is going out the door. Or do you know what I mean? Just like I'm going to go. And it comes down to like literally a millisecond of it, like a decision in your brain of just like, no, I'm going to do this. Or okay, I'm going.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I think you're right. So, like,
That's that fight, and you have to compress it down to this like tiny just moment. And as soon as you've made that decision, you just go with it, you know?
That's really solid. That's actually very, very true. So the warrior, the strength, the slashing and burning with the sword and the torch is about tiny concentrated moments of intense strength where you move forward and push back. Because there is pushback. It's not all about being soft, not all the time. But the time when you gather up that strength from inside you and you push on that thing and you push back on it, you're right. That's the moment that you walk out the door. That's the moment you turn the key.
Yeah, no, I'm going back in the supermarket.
Right. And that's that thing when sometimes, pardon my French, you just fuck it. You know, literally I'm writing a chapter entitled that one of this book that I'm working on now. Like everybody that goes down this journey has had, if you have not had the F it moment, you're not on the journey yet. And that moment has to come, like, and you will push back at that. And that's it. But then once you've made that push and you broke through that barrier, then you're going to go soft again and just let it come until it's time to push again for a second. But
I don't know if you've ever experienced like we used to climb up this sort of waterfall thing and then like jump in, and it would be really like scary if you like stood on the, and if you stood on the edge for too long, like, man, no one jumped.
Yeah, I'm not doing it. Yeah.
You just think about it too much. And so like you're standing there and you kind of thinking that, but what if I hit this rock? And you know that you can make the jump, really. Do you know what I mean? And at some point you will not jump unless you just go, fuck it. And you just stop thinking about it and you just go.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, whatever happens, happens, but fuck it, just step off the ledge.
Yes.
You know? Like, and that's that sort of, those leaps of faith that we have to do of like, yeah, I'm going out the door, I'm getting on that plane, I'm going out. And even if it's like not the actual physical thing, but it's just that making the decision and sticking with it, stick to your plan, you know?
Yeah.
That takes a lot of courage in that tiny moment, but it's also just like fuck it, and just stop thinking about it and just, you know, making that decision and going with it.
And that's that first time you step out the door after being housebound, or the first time that you truly accept when that worst panic you can think of, that fear comes, just rises up through you and it's boiling over and you just, like, all you want to do is run and you're convinced that this is the end. That is a fuck it moment too. Like, okay, bring it. Right. I would rather you fucking kill me here than go backwards. Like, at some point you get to that. And that's, you know, if you're going to kill me, you better kill me right now. Like, this is it. And so we all have those moments, and we have them in little micro bursts while we're doing our exposures. And we have them in very large epiphanous moments when we are starting ready to take.
I think I had to do that when I was young, you know, going back to school and all that sort of stuff. In the end, I just had to say, do you know what? Fuck it. If people see me having a panic attack, I don't actually care anymore.
I don't care.
I just learned to not care, which probably is why I then became like a performing musician, because I just don't, like, do you know what I mean? You have to you're putting yourself out there all the time to this criticism that you think you're having when anxious, and you're like, no one's actually criticizing you, to then every time you step on stage, you know, you're putting yourself up to people going, boo, that's rubbish, that's the worst song I've ever heard,
right?
Potentially, you know. And so, like, you just drive yourself crazy if you focused on all the negative responses that you could get. So at some point you've just got to go, like, I don't really care what they think. I'm just going to get up on the stage and do my thing. You know, I'm just going to go into my school classroom and do my thing. And if that means having having a panic attack in front of people, that means having a panic attack in front of people.
It is
who,
what it
by
is.
The way, don't care anyway.
No, could not care less. Not in the least bit interested. It's so funny. Yeah. There are, and we're going really long here. We'll wrap it up. But there are videos that I found on YouTube. There's one, a couple of famous ones. There's a bunch of them out there. Of celebrities who obviously have a panic attack in public. There's an American, I didn't even know the guy's name, it was an American newscaster. He was, you know, one of our major news networks.
Oh, I've seen that, yeah.
Have you ever seen that one?
This guy have a live panic attack?
Right, exactly. And you know, and you could see it in his face. They go back to him and he just, that's it. He can't talk. You know exactly what's happening. And I often wonder when I've seen those videos, like, does the rest of the world, like the normal world, do they care so much? Like those 2 million views, my gut tells me that 80% of those 2 million views are people with panic disorder. Like everybody else doesn't really care that the guy had a panic. They can't relate to it. It's like, they don't think anything of it. It just is what it is.
It doesn't actually look that interesting anyway, does it?
No.
It's just someone sort of freezing a little bit.
No, he just, right. He sort of freezes and you could tell he's a little bit, you know, agitated, but
you know that in his head, it's like, and like, you know, freaking out completely.
Absolutely.
But actually, on the outside, it's just kind of like, oh, is he having a panic attack?
Well, those of us who've experienced it can look at the guy and understand what's going on. But I think the rest of the world would just look and say, boy, it looked like he just got like stage fright or something. You know, it's not no major deal. So, yeah, there's so many things to get over, but it's worth it. So I think the way we should probably, you know I've said it about a million times in the last 5 minutes or so, but like if you're watching this or listening to this and you have not left your house in a while and you are just upset with yourself and you think you don't want to be like that anymore, then what I say, like start right now. I don't know what time it is and what day it is, where you are watching or listening.
Don't plan it for tomorrow.
Because
then the anticipation builds as well. Just go, okay, I forgot, I'm going to go now. I'm going to just put my car and go.
And I know that happens. I've heard that too. Like, oh, I watched your video and it inspired me to do this or that. But, and so I'll temper that by saying, if you've been housebound for the past month, you know, don't get in your car and drive 60 miles from home because you're all psyched up. That will backfire on you. But at a minimum, like, do something that makes you uncomfortable right now. Start right now, right this very minute. And, you know, it's worth it. It's well worth it. So
that was the last note I made, was just with the exposures, just to do them little but often, you know, like.
Yes. Yeah.
Just, it doesn't have to be just once a day.
No.
20 times a day.
As often as you possibly can.
Just as often as you possibly can.
Yeah.
And like, but little, but yeah, definitely not too big. Like, because so I went from, you know, like 8 months at home, unable to even step outside my door. I couldn't even go to the garden gate. You know, my dad was like, just come and stand at the garden gate. And I just couldn't
do it.
I mean, I could, but I couldn't, you know.
Right. Wouldn't.
And so then the idea of me going like, oh yeah, I'll just go back to school then, you know, would have been insane. So it was like gradually. And in the end, I started going to just registration, which was like 20 minutes in the morning. I didn't even do a full lesson. And then I'd come home and then, you know, a couple of weeks of that. And then I would do one lesson and then come home. And then within about 4 weeks, I was fully back at school, which was...
And my guess would be that once you got to the point where you could say do 3 lessons, getting to 7 was not that big a jump. The jump from the 20-minute registration to the first 2 lessons was huge, but the lesson, staying 2 periods to 7 periods, not as huge. So, that's a thing. So, yes, start small. Just as long as you feel uncomfortable, then you're doing it right. So just whatever makes you feel uncomfortable is where you start, and just do it as often as possible. Tiny little steps forward every single time. And next thing you know, like, holy cow, you're at the garden gate. Next thing you know, right? So,
Yeah,
it happens. And you'll feel good. And all of a sudden, your life won't feel like crap anymore. Like, you're moving forward again.
And that, just take that fight and just compress it into the tiny moment of making the decision, and then soften and relax and just let it happen.
And you'll learn.
Stick to your plan. Let it happen.
Yeah. And I think you'll learn, too, like, when it's time to fight and when it's not time to fight. Like, you get good at knowing, like, oh, this is one of those moments where I got to be strong, you know, and then you do it and then go soft again. So, but it's like anything else. You have to learn to do it. You have to learn that also. So don't, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of stuff that goes into it. Just don't start right now. Take a lot of tiny steps all the time. And just don't judge yourself harshly for feeling anything you feel. It's all correct. So,
yeah.
So that's the deal. All right, so we will try not to wait weeks and weeks between these. We'll try and schedule chapter 9 for next week if possible. And
here's the positive thing is chapter 9 is being yourself again. We're over all the...
Yeah, she starts talking about the better stuff, right? So
yeah, being yourself again.
Yeah, yeah. So very good. All right, so I guess that's it. Thanks for stopping by for chapter 8, this marathon session. We've been going for quite a while now. And
this is about the shortest chapter as well. Sorry.
I know. We got off on a bunch of tangents, but I think it was all good, so that's fine. And yeah, we'll see you guys next time. So how to get to us, I always have to end that way, right? My website, thatanxietyguy.com, Facebook, Twitter, all this, That Anxiety Guy all the time. Join the discussion group. Holly's involved too, so...
It's really good. I really like it.
Ask questions, and it's been I think that's the best place. If you can, you can comment on the video, and I will answer. Holly will chime in, I guess, when she can. But really, the Facebook discussion group has been the best place to actually bring up questions, because then other people see your questions, and
there's some other really, really good people in there as well.
Solid people who are further down the road who are lending their experience, and it's really great. I'm very appreciative of that. So, all right, folks, see you next time. Ta-ta.